been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. The road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this beautiful Saturday morning here in Winnipeg. It looks like it's going to be a spectacular day. We're glad you've tuned in and are joining us for at least a portion of your Saturday morning. Alongside Dave Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the program. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's one way you can reach us here in studio. You can also do so via text. You can send your text messages, send your comments, send your inquiries as to Ezzy's health status to 1290.90.
I'm doing okay.
Standard messaging rates do apply. So
I'm good.
That's good. So people, they don't need to text you to find out how you're doing.
Drew, let me tell you something. I was not doing well right after the pierogi eating competition.
No.
I couldn't get to the bathroom quick enough.
We will get into the pierogi eating contest in the final segment of the show, assuming the station doesn't spontaneously combust before that happens, but that'll be the recap around the 10:45 hour this morning. Got a bunch of giveaways for you, courtesy of our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. So get your texting fingers ready. We'll let you know when, but you can send us some text messages to 1290.90, and we'll give away some prizes on today's program. We start with the Winnipeg Jets, of course, as we do each and every week. And I got to say, I'm thankful on this Saturday morning for Matthew Perreault. And I'm thankful for Matthew Perreault and his forthrightness and his honesty and the fact he doesn't speak in canned cliches. Because if it wasn't for Matthew Perreault, there's really not a lot to talk about as it pertains to the Winnipeg Jets on this Saturday morning. But in speaking with a newspaper, a French language newspaper, and my Francais is certainly not anything to write home about, the 7 years, 8 years, whatever I took of it in school didn't really pay off, unfortunately. You know, Matthew Perreault, in speaking to a French language newspaper, came out and sort of laid the groundwork and set the bar for the Winnipeg Jets season. You know, here's some quotes from the article, courtesy of Google Translate. "We've added talent to key positions, and we've got all the tools in place to make it happen this season." Perreault continuing, "There are no more excuses. Something must happen this season. Otherwise, there will be some change in the organization." Speaking about the defense, "As an offensive left-handed defenseman, Dmitry Kulikov will fill a specific need. It complements our defense in a beautiful way. We now have a top six that is as good, if not better, than any other in the NHL." Speaking about the goaltending need, "It was another need. Steve Mason had some trouble in Philadelphia, but he's a guy who won the Calder Trophy with Columbus. He's already been very successful. Sometimes a new start with a new team, it can become a source of motivation for a player. I am confident that he will do a good job." Matthew Perreault, I want to talk first about the comment. The real one that jumps out is, "There are no more excuses. Something must happen this season. Otherwise, there will be some changes in the organization."
Yeah, and, you know, this stirred up a little controversy here, guys, in Winnipeg. And, you know, when Matthew Perreault talks about there might be some changes in the organization, that doesn't necessarily mean coaching or management. It could be player personnel. We don't know. He didn't specifically mention Paul Maurice or Kevin Cheveldayoff. The point that he's making is they haven't made the playoffs the last 2 years, and the expectations for this team are making the playoffs. So if they don't make the playoffs, there's obviously going to be some change, right? I mean, we saw change after last season. They went out and they acquired Steve Mason and they acquired Dmitry Kulikov because they saw a need in goal and on defense, right? So I don't think there's anything that new here. You mentioned earlier, Drew, what's a little bit surprising, if you want to call it that, is that he said it. because a lot of the players are thinking it, but they don't necessarily say it. So I don't think anything that he said was controversial. I think it's look at if the Jets are five games under 500 or six or seven games under 500 at the quarter mark of the season, I mean, yeah, Paul Maurice's job is on the line. I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff's job is on the line at all. But when you're talking about this Jets team, Kevin Cheveldayoff has gone out and acquired a number one goaltender and upgraded the left side of the defense. So if the Jets start off slow, I would say that Paul Maurice's job is probably the most in danger. I'm not saying necessarily he's going to get fired if the Jets aren't in a playoff spot 20 games into the season. But when you're talking about this team, the expectations are definitely higher than they were last year. But at the end of the day, Dave, the Jets haven't made the playoffs the last 2 years. So it's playoffs or bust this year. Anything less won't be accepted by anybody in the organization.
You hope that's the case, certainly. And, you know, Dave, you know, obviously Perreault speaking, as he said, there's nothing really controversial in what Matthew Perreault said or anything shocking from my perspective, but the fact he said it, and that's the honesty part that I was referring to at the outset of the show when it was so refreshing to hear a player speak honestly and truthfully about what the mood is, at least with himself. You can presume it's with most of the people in the dressing room, but it is very refreshing to hear a player speak so honestly like that.
I think it's, you know, probably a bit of a sad testament that it is, you know, such a unique thing and that we're, you know, having to applaud the fact that Matthew Perreault speaks his mind. But one thing you do see when you talk to him, and, you know, I see him speaking to the media all the time, obviously after games or practices, is that he is always very candid and he speaks his mind and he's not afraid to say what he's thinking. And, you know, obviously this is a translation, so there, you got to be a little bit careful with that, obviously. But at the same time, I don't think he said anything like, as he just touched on, that was supremely, you know, controversial. He basically said what everyone is thinking. And there's nothing wrong with that. He didn't, like, call anyone out specifically. He just said, these are the things that we needed to do. We've addressed them. Now we have to go out and do them as a collective group. He's not saying, I did my job. Everybody else has to do their job. The entire team. And so I really don't think, look, he's part of that unit. He's a veteran player and there's expectations. And I don't think it's a bad thing in Winnipeg to have high expectations of your team. I mean, the fact is people pay a lot of money to see these games. The games can be entertaining and that's good. But at the end of the day, it's about wins. It's about getting a product that's going to get you to the playoffs and then do something. I mean, this is a team that's had one playoff appearance since they've been in Winnipeg. They've not want a playoff game. So that he's right. There are expectations. And I think it goes right across the board. I think it's player personnel. I think it's the coaching staff. And I think it's the GM. And so Ezzie's right. You know, Kevin Cheveldayoff's done some work to acquire the pieces that he needs. It's on Paul Maurice this season. I mean, and we don't know, obviously, what's happening with his contract, whether, you know, when he said he's fine going in the way it is in the final year of his deal. But whether he gets another one or not, still, I think he'll still be on the hot seat, relatively speaking.
And Dave, coming from a player who's a veteran player and who is entering the first year of his four-year contract and a player who the Jets showed the commitment to and they did not want to lose him in the expansion draft. That was clear that Matthew Perreault was not going to be exposed in the expansion draft.
And they signed him last summer, so like a year ahead of when his contract was going to expire.
So I think especially for a veteran like Matthew Perreault and Blake Wheeler and Brian Little and Dustin Byfuglien, the veteran leaders of this team, these guys want to get back into the playoffs. And that doesn't mean that Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, Josh Morrissey, some of the younger players don't want to get in the playoffs. Of course, every player on any NHL team or any other hockey team wants to get into the playoffs. But I think especially these guys that are in the crucial parts of their career where they can see that this team is building something special here with all of their young draft picks that are producing at the NHL level. Not to mention guys like Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic or Christian Vesalainen. I mean, this Jets team, the window for them to win starts next year. It really does. And so when he's talking about changes in the organization, and, you know, I did read it in French, and the translation is pretty accurate.
It's pretty close, yeah.
And I took 13 years of French, so I think I can, say that with confidence that I can understand it enough. But Matthew Perreault, I think, has always been a very candid guy. We know that. He spoke about Jacob Trouba last year before Jacob Trouba signed his contract, and that stirred up a little bit of controversy. But really, I think what you're seeing here is a positive if you're a Jets fan, because you're seeing that Matthew Perreault wants to win. He wants to get into the playoffs. And not only do I think Matthew Perreault wants to get into the playoffs and Blake Wheeler and some of the other veterans on the team want to get in, they want to win a round or two. This is a team, I think, that was very disappointed with the way the season finished last year. So I think that these guys are putting pressure on themselves.
You both mentioned, you know, Paul Maurice, you know, we know that this is, he does not yet have a contract extension despite, you know, in April when the season ended, it sounded like they were going to give him a contract extension 10 minutes from the end of the season. We're now sitting here on the 12th of August, no contract extension for Paul Maurice. I'd be surprised at this point in time if he was to get a contract extension before the season starts, certainly. You know, when he talks about pressure, I think the pressure and the hottest seat in the organization, as much as Kevin Cheveldayoff is probably feeling a little bit of warmth under his seat as well, I think the hottest seat and the spotlight is directly focused on Paul Maurice.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on everybody. I mean, if the players aren't feeling pressure, then they're in the wrong business. And Paul Maurice's situation, Drew, kind of reminds you of Mike O'Shea with the Bombers.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't have a contract extension. He got the Bombers into the playoffs, and he earned himself a contract extension along with Kyle Walters. So, I mean, yeah, Paul Maurice has to get this team into the playoffs. I don't see Paul Maurice being a coach of the Jets in the future if he's not able to get this group in the playoffs. I just don't see it.
I mean, there's obviously a multitude of factors, health of the team, how the other teams do in the Central. But I think, as he's right, I think, and Drew, you touched on it, I think there's no question he's got the hottest seat in the house because he's the coach. And the fact is the talent is there now. There's a little more depth. So you like that as an organization, obviously. You can rely on some of the younger players now to come into your system. He himself has talked about these guys as no longer being young players, it's just men who are in the room. So, I mean, those excuses, and, you know, he himself touched on it because I think he realized in his end of season comments about the fact that there really are no more excuses. I mean, obviously, the health of the team is a big factor. If you lose three or four players, that's going to impact your team. I don't care which team you are. That's obviously impactful. But the fact is, if this team is healthy and they can't maintain their discipline, play better defense, I mean, scoring wasn't an issue for this team. They scored a lot of goals last year. So scoring isn't a problem. But if they can't improve the areas that they needed to improve in, which, like I just touched on, discipline and goaltending, well, it's going to fall on somebody, yeah. And the reality is you can't trade the players. So then that's sometimes when you start to look organizationally at a coach and you say, is it a system situation where these players aren't playing in a system that is conducive to them winning?
And I think, Dave, all of us here respect Paul Maurice as a man and as a coach, but it's a results-based business. Mm-hmm. And when you've missed the playoffs the last couple of years, and as Dave mentioned, when you have the offensive firepower of Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, Brian Little, we've talked about it. The Jets scored, only six teams scored more goals than the Jets last year, right? And we expect that to be the same this year. Who knows? Patrick Laine might score 50 goals this year, the way he was scoring at certain parts of the season. So when you have this many weapons, you have to be better defensively. The special teams have got to be better. And now that Kevin Cheveldayoff has gone out and acquired a number one goaltender and acquired a better left side defenseman, which could end up being a second pairing defenseman for the Jets, at the very least, Kulikov is going to be a third pairing defenseman. The results have to be there. The Jets have to make the playoffs. This is a situation, and I realize it's tough. Only 16 teams out of 31 are going to make the playoffs. But there's no excuses anymore. This, and especially, Drew, when you see what Toronto and Edmonton did last year. Mm-hmm. No, Toronto and Edmonton made the playoffs. A lot of people didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. Edmonton even got into the second round. Yeah. But especially the Toronto Maple Leafs. Not many people thought the Leafs were going to go from the worst team in the league to a playoff team, almost beating Washington in the first round. So when you see some of those other Canadian teams and what they did last year, you know that you got to step up your game.
The weather's hot outside. It's also hot under the seat of Jets head coach Paul Maurice. When we come back, we talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. They have 11 defensemen on their roster. They're going to lose some of them, but how is it going to be done? Waivers, trade. We look at the Golden Knights defensive situation when we return. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Garrison Defense. From Calgary, the Vegas Golden Knights sign Vegas resident Derek Engel.
He should be a fan favorite.
From the Anaheim Ducks, the Vegas Golden Knights select Clayton Stoner, Trevor Van Rensdyk. From Washington, the Vegas Golden Knights select Nate Schmidt, defenseman.
Not sure if you could tell in that clip, but the Vegas Golden Knights selected a whole bunch of defensemen during the expansion draft. They've made some moves. They've traded away a few of those guys. But here we stand on August 12th, and they have 11 defensemen on their roster. That's the subject of this segment. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're live on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're looking for something to do tonight, courtesy of our friends at Rumors, we have two sets of four tickets for tonight's 7:15 p.m. show. So send us a text message to 129090. Text COMEDY to 129090. If you're able to go to Rumors tonight, 7:15 p.m. is the show time. Doors open at 5:30. Text COMEDY to 129090. I'll give away two sets of tickets this segment. Again, standard messaging rates do apply. Send a text saying COMEDY to 129090 and we'll give away some tickets. Gentlemen, the Golden Knights, as we mentioned, have 11 defensemen on their roster. They just came to terms with Nate Schmidt on a two-year contract extension. He went to salary arbitration.
Nate Schmidt had a good year last year for Washington.
Nate Schmidt is a very... Yes, I think he's a very intriguing young defenseman.
He was a good third-pairing guy for them.
Only 26 years old. I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, he had 7 goals last year. I'll double-check that right now if the internet will work here. No, pardon me. He had 3 goals and 14 assists last year for 17 points. That's where I got the 7 from. Here are the 11 defensemen the Golden Knights have under contract. Jason Garrison, who came over from the Tampa Bay Lightning. Lucas Spezza came over from the... Vancouver Canucks. They have Clayton Stoner, Nate Schmidt, who we just mentioned, Braden McNabb, formerly of the LA Kings, John Merrill of the New Jersey Devils, Colin Miller, Boston Bruins, Derek England, he was signed from the Calgary Flames, he's a Vegas resident, Shea Theodore, he's sort of the best of that group as the, you know, he's a young up-and-coming defenseman, formerly with the Ducks organization, Griffin Reinhart, and Brad Hunt. He's a veteran sort of defenseman who's bounced around, played a little bit in the NHL, more of an AHL defenseman. So they have 11 defensemen on their roster. We know they can't start the year with 11 defensemen. Of those 11, only Shea Theodore can be sent down to the AHL without having to clear waivers. So how do you think...
And that's because he's on his entry-level deal.
That's because he's still on his entry-level deal. How do you think the Golden Knights are going to resolve this logjam on defense? It seems like it's fairly clear they're either going to have to put some players through waivers, risk losing them for nothing, or they're going to have to try and trade away, make some trades with some of the teams who might be defense-needy at this point in the season.
Yeah, and it could be a combination of the two, as you mentioned, Drew. I wouldn't be surprised if at the very least, Brad Hunt is a guy that plays in the American Hockey League this year, and then you see one or two players placed on waivers or traded. And we know the defensemen that aren't going to be sent down or placed on waivers. Your top couple of defensemen, yeah, you're talking about Braden McNabb. You're talking about Shea Theodore, who had a really good year last year for the Anaheim Ducks. And I would be shocked if Jason Garrison and Lucas Abiza aren't starting defensemen for the Vegas Golden Knights. So I would be looking at Griffin Reinhart as a candidate to either be traded or placed on waivers. John Merrill's an interesting guy, too, because John Merrill was a high draft pick for the New Jersey Devils.
Second-round pick, formerly of the Devils.
Yeah, and you know he had varying degrees of success with the Devils organization, but he's a guy that might be a candidate to be moved or placed on waivers. I would imagine they'd prefer to move John Merrill and maybe get a draft pick. But you know what's the most surprising, Drew, about the defensemen that you've named here, the 11 defensemen, is it doesn't include Mark Methot and it doesn't include Trevor Van Riemsdyk because they traded both of those defensemen. And I thought that those were two defensemen that could have played in their top four. Certainly Mark Methot would have been one of the best defensemen for the Vegas Golden Knights. He was excellent over the years with the Ottawa Senators, often paired with Erik Karlsson. So I was surprised that they didn't retain Mark Methot, and I realized that, you know, they acquired assets by trading Mark Methot and Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who went to the Carolina Hurricanes. But, you know, this group of defensemen, it's not a group of defensemen that's going to stand out to you as far as having a Norris candidate on there or a Norris winner, but it's a pretty solid group. It's definitely a serviceable group of defensemen. You kind of have a mixture of offensive-minded defensemen, guys like Jason Garrison, and then you have some defensive defensemen, guys like Nate Schmidt and Clayton Stoner, even though Nate Schmidt's a guy that does have somewhat of an offensive upside. So they're going to have to make some moves here. And going back to the expansion draft in late June, I was always under the impression that the Vegas Golden Knights were going to load up on goaltenders, because that's what we heard. Mm-hmm. And now they've loaded up on defensemen. And again, it's a good position to have, because let's be honest here, guys, the Vegas Golden Knights aren't going to compete for a Stanley Cup next year.
No.
I'd be surprised in that Western Conference if they were even able to crack the top 10. So you might as well get some assets here, whether that's draft picks or players for the American Hockey League, because even a guy like Griffin Reinhart, who was, speaking of high draft picks, he was a high draft pick of the New York Islanders, and then he was traded to the Edmonton Oilers. He's a guy that
he was a fourth overall pick only a few years ago. He's never been able to materialize into an NHL player.
Yeah, and you know, Griffin Reinhart, you know, his offensive upside is limited. Mm-hmm. He's more so, I think, a third pairing defenseman at the NHL level. But Dave, if you put a guy like Griffin Reinhart on waivers, he might get picked up. So if you're the Vegas Golden Knights, you're George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon, you might want to move a couple of these guys and really get anything that you can.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ez. And I think that once the expansion draft had happened and they did load up on defense like you just talked about, I think the expectation was they would be making a whole lot more trades than just the two that they did for of the defense that they had. I was a little surprised, especially because, like Drew touched on when he first opened the segment, you know, Shea Theodore is the only guy on his ELC who can be sent down and not have to clear waivers. So it's the advantage, of course, early in the season is a lot of teams are in that same position. So you could get guys down into your minor league system without the concern of having them, you know, poached by another team, because, of course, those other teams have players they need to kind of get down. So usually you have that ability, unless the player is highly desirable, that a team is unlikely to be going after your players for their minor league system to have that ability to bring up. But again, that luxury is only going to last for so long before teams, you know, start to experience injuries on their defense. And then a player that you may need to call up quickly and then want to send back down is going to become not an asset, but a problem. So a team like Vegas really doesn't have much of an option at this point other than to, like I said, they can kind of manipulate it for now. But really, I think George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon, as Ez just touched on, really are going to have to start looking to start acquiring those assets, because otherwise you're going to lose these players for nothing. And you're a new team. You're a team that's building your system. You're doing all the things that you need to do. One of those key things that you need to do is acquire draft picks to kind of populate your system from within.
Asset retention. I mean, the only of the 11 defensemen that are on the roster, I think the only one that I wouldn't have any concern about, that I think would get through waivers, is probably Brad Hunt. I mean, Brad has had, you know, 5 games here in the NHL, 6 games there. He's pretty clearly more of an AHL defenseman than he is an NHL defenseman. The other 10 defensemen, I mean, sure, Griffin Reinhart hasn't been able to prove anything at the NHL level yet, but I would take a chance probably on a left-shooting 23-year-old defenseman. You know, it takes longer for him to blossom maybe in the NHL. His foot speed, I think, is a little bit questionable, but he's big. He's 6'4". He's 220 pounds. I would take a gamble at him. I mean, what does it cost you? It costs you $800,000 this year and next year. It's probably an educated guess and an educated risk in case you maybe finally he's able to harness the talent that made him the fourth overall pick.
Yeah, and it's possible, Drew, that the Vegas Golden Knights decide to keep Griffin Reinhart because he's much younger than a guy like Clayton Stoner, for example,
sure,
who I think that they could see being a third-pairing defenseman. But when you're talking about a guy like Derek Englund, he's most likely going to be a third-pairing defenseman. So what I see the Vegas Golden Knights doing at the beginning of the season is starting the season off with 8 defensemen.
Sure.
And then you said send Brad Hunt down to the AHL, assuming he clears waivers. And then basically what you have is a situation where you have to decide what you're going to do with 2 defensemen,
mm-hmm,
right? So, I mean, it's really between, in my opinion, Griffin Reinhart, John Merrill, Clayton Stoner, and Griffin Reinhart was already mentioned. Griffin,
yeah.
Reinhart, John Merrill,
Clayton
and
Stoner.
Clayton Stoner. So 2 of those 3, I think, will be moved or placed on waivers.
Yeah, it's a bit of a problem for the Golden Knights. I'm sort of surprised they haven't tried to resolve it, because I'm not sure at this point in time what's going to open up on a lot of the other NHL teams, unless a team suffers an injury in a training camp or something along those
lines.
Right,
but you know what? I don't think it'll be that big of a problem, because they knew this was coming. They drafted an excess of players knowing that they could move them for assets, whether those are draft picks or minor league players, right? So, for example, if you need to move a Clayton Stoner, he's a guy that played a little bit in the American Hockey League last year. So you find a team that needs a defenseman in the American Hockey League. Could be the Winnipeg Jets. You never know.
Yeah.
Right? So,
but that's a $3.25 million defenseman,
sure,
playing in your AHL.
Sure.
Team.
But you know that he also has the ability to play in the NHL, right?
Sure.
So he's on a one-way contract. So a guy like Clayton Stoner, I don't think has you know, the most appeal around the NHL, but he certainly does have some appeal, and so does Griffin Reinhardt. At 23 years old, he might not be the defenseman that we thought he was going to be when he was drafted fourth overall by the New York Islanders, but he certainly does still have some upside, and, you know, maybe there's a fit in another organization, but George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon knew they were going to have an excess of players, right? You knew that they were going to select more players than they can keep. So some of these guys are going to play for their AHL affiliate. Some of these guys are going to be placed on waivers. Some are going to be traded. I would imagine when you're talking about some of these veteran defensemen, especially a guy like Clayton Stoner, that contract might be hard to move. But I think that would come via trade.
It'll be an interesting dilemma for George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon to try and resolve as we approach the start of training camp, give or take a month, 5 weeks away. Actually, less than a month until the prospects tournament in Penticton, BC. That starts, I believe, Friday, September the 9th. So we are under a month away from that.
I'll say this about this Vegas Golden Knights team. I mean, I think they're going to be tough to play against. And Gerard Gallant is a heck of a coach. I mean, I've always been a big fan of Gerard Gallant. He was a great hockey player for the Detroit Red Wings, too. I think they'll be competitive, but you look at the talent on this roster, and I don't think it's going to be enough to get them into the playoffs.
No, the talent is lacking. They'll have good goaltending with Marc-Andre Fleury and a good backup goaltender in Calvin Pickard, but there's no depth up front. There's not a ton of talent up front either, so they will be they'll be in a hard-fought battle, I think, to be in a playoff spot.
Gallant will have them ready to play every night, though.
That's true. Definitely will. Congratulations to Glenn Firth. He's the winner of some of the Rumors tickets. Stay tuned for more giveaways on the show coming up. Glenn is off to Rumors later on tonight to see Ivan Dekker. In case if you did not win, tickets available to see Ivan at RumorsComedyClub.com.
Is Ivan Dekker going to show up to Rumors on a double-decker bus?
If you acquire him a double-decker bus, possibly. Do you see any double-decker buses nowadays? My sixth birthday, I think,
In London, England, I believe.
Yeah, in England.
Yeah, but there used to be double-decker buses in Winnipeg.
On my sixth birthday, if I recall correctly, we took a double-decker bus to a fire hall and took a tour of the fire hall.
It's funny, because on Ezzy's sixth birthday, he took an upper-decker.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jim Cherney, the deputy editor of the Sporting News. We'll talk about the New York Islanders with Jim. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Cast on TSN1290.ca.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Jim Cherney. Jim is the deputy editor of Sporting News. Jim, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, what's up, boys? How are you?
Doing very well, Jim. How about yourself?
I'm doing real well. Thanks. Thanks for checking in with me today.
Our pleasure. Thanks for being able to join us on a beautiful Saturday morning, no doubt. Jim, you know, I thought we'd start. You know, we're with the New York Islanders organization, and we're so familiar with the team for so long. Thought we'd start there. You know, we spent a segment last week on the show talking about John Tavares, and that is sort of the big unknown, the big free agent unknown as we enter the 2017-18 NHL season, is John Tavares' status, his future with the New York Islanders. You know, as we stand here today on August 12th, he said all the right things. Do you believe that John Tavares, you know, how important is it for the Islanders to get their arena situation resolved before John Tavares is ready to make a long-term commitment to the team?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It really, to me, is along, I think, with the unresolved Matt Duchene story there in Colorado. I think the John Tavares story is the most interesting one that's still kind of hanging out there in the NHL this offseason. You know, he's a tremendously loyal guy. He's shown it in many ways, not the least of which was the team-friendly contract, long-term contract he signed and he's currently playing under. but also with his tremendous patience, with the fact that, you know, really Garth Snow has not done the greatest job of building this team around Tavares. He's never really had that elite winger on his side, you know, to ride shotgun with him. You know, but yet, you know, he's very patient. He's very loyal. He's constantly talking up the organization and how much he loves it here, loves living on Long Island. And, you know, but there are a lot of buts here as he heads into the final year of that contract and whether or not he actually will sign the contract extension with the Islanders. And you nail the thing that would stand out the most is the Islanders' unresolved arena situation. You know, he's already gone through, Tavares has, and his other teammates and the fans have had to deal with the team having that Nassau Coliseum. You know, are they going to move from the Coliseum? Are they going to stay on the island where they've always been? You know, that was hanging over them for years. Then finally they move to the Barclays Center. They make a big splash. It's a beautiful building. Unfortunately, it's a building that was built for basketball. So the sight lines aren't great, and the ice has been terrible, and Tavares himself gets hurt in the next-to-last home game of last year because of the bad ice behind the net. He ends up getting hurt, misses the last couple games of the season. So it's bad to worse to even worse. And now they're talking about getting out of their lease at the Barclays Center, except they have nowhere to go. And the Islanders are, you know, trying to form a nucleus to build a new building somewhere on the Queens Long Island border. And that's a big question mark. It's probably, they're probably not going to get approved for that. So where are they going to play? Do they go back to the Coliseum? Do they somehow stick it out at Barclays and try to make that a better situation? If you're a superstar player like John Tavares, and the Islanders, you already know that your team is struggling to acquire, you know, free agents aren't running to the Islanders in part because of that arena situation. You know, what is the lure of staying there then when you could go to, you know, possibly another team that could offer you, you know, probably the same amount of money? He's going to get his money no matter what as a star player, but could give you a better situation and a situation where, a team is attractive to other players, star players. So my gut tells me, just because I've been around John Tavares so long, that he's going to stay loyal to this organization. But I think if this all keeps dragging on into the season, I think the longer it goes, I think you have to go with the obvious that the longer this goes on without him signing the extension, the more likely it is that he's gonna leave. And if that's the case, then Garth Snow's in the terrible situation of having to trade John Tavares before the deadline, you know, next February, March.
Jim, do you see similarities between John Tavares' contract situation and Steven Stamkos' contract situation? Because many thought that Steven Stamkos was going to test the unrestricted free agent market.
Yeah, there are similarities because obviously they're two phenomenal players. You know, certainly two of the best players that have approached unrestricted free agency in recent memory. But I think there are some big differences here. You know, I don't think Stamkos, had any issues with, outer issues like the arena situation that Tavares and the Islanders are wrestling with right now. You know, that wasn't the issue in Tampa. The bigger issue was that Tampa had so many players coming up on contracts, so many other players that also had to be paid other than Stamkos. So the question was, well, can we keep everybody if Stamkos gets his money? And, you know, can we keep Hedman? Can we keep Johnson? Can we keep, you know, Kucherov? Can we keep all these guys? And I think that was more the issue. With the Islanders, that's not an issue at all. You know, the money is not an issue. They're going to be able to pay Tavares, and they're still going to be able to be in, you know, fairly decent salary cap situation because they don't have those other elite pieces around him. which leads to another bigger issue. Obviously, Tampa, even though they didn't make the playoffs last year like the Islanders, which I think is an anomaly. I think they're going to be a contender again this year. They have built that team around Steven Stamkos with such tremendous talent. The Islanders have never really done that for John Tavares. So I think there are some distinct differences heading towards UFA status for Tavares compared to Stamkos.
Jim, in your first answer to Drew, you talked about Matt Duchene, or touched on Matt Duchene briefly, but I was curious as to what you think will happen with that situation. Do you think he'll be traded, and if so, to whom?
You know, I'm laughing because we're starting with two great questions to start the show, you know, JT's situation and then Duchene. If I was a betting man, as Alain Vigneault, head coach of the Rangers, likes to say all the time, if I was a betting man, I would have bet that Matt Duchene would have been traded long before now by Colorado. But you know, here we are. You know, training camp's 4 or 5 weeks away. And, you know, Duchene has been pretty vocal about the fact that he's mentally checked out of Colorado. I think we all saw that recent interview, that he did while training, I think it was about a week ago. It's clear this is a guy that wants to know where he's going to be so he can just take that step forward and move on. There's no passion for him to stay in Colorado. And I understand Joe Sakic, you know, has a commodity here, a valuable trade chip, and he wants to get as much back as he can. He has to do that. That's his job to do that for the Avalanche. But at some point, you got to cut the cord with the player. You got to pull the trigger on a trade. And, circling back to the Islanders, are very, very interested and motivated to make a deal for Matt Duchene. They have loaded up on assets, most notably future draft picks, first and second round picks. They have multiple first and second round picks in next year's draft. They also have some young players that would be of interest to Colorado, but yet Sakic has not pulled the trade with them. There have also been a lot of rumors about Columbus. And the reason why I mentioned those two teams at the first and foremost is I think if Sakic is so cautious here, not wanting to get burned on trading Duchene, that I couldn't see him trading him within the Western Conference. So if you eliminate the Western Conference teams, you look to the East, the teams that have really been in serious negotiations with Colorado have been the Islanders and the Blue Jackets. And the Blue Jackets are kind of in that let's go for it now mode. You know, they've been very aggressive this offseason looking to take that next step as a contender. I would say those are the two likely landing spots if Duchene gets traded. But circling back again to the very, first part of the question, I'm shocked that he hasn't been traded yet. I think for the organization and for the player, it would be a very bad situation if Duchene heads to training camp with the Avalanche. It's not something he wants, and then it's just going to hang over the team, and they already have enough issues as it is. I really think they need to cut bait here, if you will. And make a move.
Jim Cerny is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jim covers the NHL for Sporting News. Jim, along those same lines, if you're a fan of the Colorado Avalanche and you've seen the, let's call them curious moves that Joe Sakic has made in his tenure as the head man in Colorado, how can you have the confidence that he's going to make the right move when it comes to Matt Duchene?
Well, yeah, I mean, and, you know, that's probably part of his hesitancy, too, in making this move, because this, you know, let's face it, you know, all things being equal, you don't really want to trade Matt Duchene. You know, he's still young enough, still under contract for another couple years, even though he had the down year last year. You know, he's a guy that you want on your team, you know, for a younger team still building its way up. But the situation is what it is, and most likely he will get traded. And Sakic, I think, based on, you know, past moves that have not worked out there since he's been there, I think he's extremely gun-shy. I think it's affected him more than, you know, the fans worrying about what Sakic does, in this deal, or having confidence in him to make the right deal. I'm wondering about Sakic's confidence here in making a deal, because opposing other GMs have been very, very frustrated in their talks regarding Duchene with Sakic. Because, again, I go back to that phrase, he seems extremely gun-shy here. He seems extremely afraid of making a mistake, which, of course, is understandable. But as the GM, you got to be strong and believe in your convictions and do what's best for the team and then move on. And obviously that's not happened here in this situation.
Jim, you worked for the New York Rangers for many years, and when you see what the New York Rangers did this offseason, trading Derek Stepan and Antti Raanta to the Arizona Coyotes, do you have any concerns that this year might be the year that the Rangers take a step back and maybe don't get into the playoffs?
You know, it's a very, very good question, because that conference, the Metro, not conference, the division, the Metropolitan Division is so good. And now you got, Carolina has vastly improved themselves. They were a vastly improved team the second half of last year. And then I've really liked what they've done in this offseason. So, they're going to be on the cusp pushing there. The Islanders missed the playoffs by 1 point, basically because of just a disastrous first half of the season. They were a playoff team the couple of years prior. So you have to think the Islanders are going to be right there pushing as well. And you've got the two-time defending cup champions, the two-time defending President's Trophy winners, even though I think both of those teams might be a little weaker than they were a year ago. You'd have to figure their playoff teams. It's going to be a grind just to get through that division. I think the Rangers, I think they are a playoff team, but there are so many things, and just like any other team, I guess, but so many things that need to go right. Kevin Shattenkirk, I like the signing. I like the fact that it's only a four-year deal. They didn't commit 7-8 years at $7 million or whatever for him. But he's never been a top pair defenseman in his career. He's an elite offensive defenseman. He is going to wake up that power play, you would think. But he's never been a top pair guy, and I'm not saying he can't do it, and I'm not saying Ryan McDonagh is not a really, really good partner for him, that they won't be a really good tandem. But it's still a question mark. He was a second pair guy in St. Louis, and really in Washington, he was a third pair guy, and did not have a great playoff, and, didn't really adjust that great to Washington after the trade at the deadline. So there's still questions there, even though I do like the signing. Of greater concern, I think, is Antti Raanta, what he did for the Rangers last year when Henrik Lundqvist struggled in the first half of the season. He really bailed out the Rangers and kept them on a strong start and a playoff run all year with his strong play as the number two goalie, a very reliable guy. Now they have Andrei Pavlik, who does have past experience as a number one, but really, his game has fallen off the cliff the last couple of years.
Yeah, Jim, we don't have enough time to talk about Andrei Pavlik.
Yeah.
we're a little too familiar with some of his fall off the cliff play here in Winnipeg.
Well, but now he's a problem for the Rangers, I think. And there's nobody coming up from the minors, nobody that's in line.
Yeah.
Pavlik's the number two there, so that's a concern. And then, they never replaced Derek Stepan yet. Yes, Mika Zibanejad will move up and be the number one center. Yes, Kevin Hayes moves up from third line to second line. That's all well and good. But there's still a void there. David Desharnais is a fourth line center. They sign him. So somebody now needs to emerge, or there's still another trade out there for the Rangers to make. You hear all the Tyler Bozak talk. So the Rangers have some really big questions there and some things that we won't know until, we're well into the season. But again, to your original question, are they a playoff team? I do think that they will make the playoffs.
Less than 2 months before the regular season begins, Jim Cerny covers the NHL for Sporting News. Jim, appreciate your time and your insight. We'll do it again once the season starts.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm sorry for ruining everybody's day by bringing up Andre Pavlik.
Like you said, someone else's problem now, so we're not too concerned.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Jim, appreciate it. Thanks again.
Yeah, take care, boys.
When we come back, we look at some of the RFAs that still exist in the NHL. We wonder how difficult, how contentious are those contract negotiations going to be. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
The way you got to go about it is just you got to control what you can control and go about your business, you know, every day. Just enjoying my summer and working hard and getting better on the ice. So, and just leaving that to my agent and the team. You start to get around August and you get that itch. You want to get the season going and we're all excited about it.
That's Toronto Maple Leafs RFA Connor Brown. Just in case you were worried that too many hockey players were speaking honestly and not in cliche,
yeah,
Connor took care of that concern for you right there. He's not concerned about his RFA status. He's one of about 18 players.
Is it just me or did he kind of sound like Phil Kessel?
There's a little, you know, because Phil's sort of at a bit of a higher octave, so he was, I think, ish. Phil Kessel-ish.
Drew, are you an audiologist? Like, what's going on right now?
I wish I could be.
By the way, I know we make fun of the Toronto Maple Leafs a lot here in Winnipeg, but I really like some of the players they have. Connor Brown, good player, scored 20 goals last year. Zach Hyman, also another really good player. They signed him to, I believe, a three-year deal or a four-year deal. So that Leafs team is a definite up-and-coming team.
They certainly are. We'll talk about the RFAs that still exist and are still unsigned as we head into the middle of August, but I should mention that this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Drew, the question is, what is Frank cooking up at the lake?
I don't know. Hopefully Frank will send us a text message and let us know what he is. Usually has something going on the big green egg or whatever he's got there. It usually is scrumptious looking, so he'll probably send something our way in the course of the next 66 minutes, rather.
Drew, I've been asking Frank to drop off some food at my condo, but he just keeps texting me, how did you get this number?
Yeah, again, that's, you know, a very reasonable response in Frank's situation. The biggest name that's still unsigned is Leon Draisaitl.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Edmonton Oilers.
Yep.
And, you know, we know what McDavid signed for, so that sets the ceiling, obviously, in the Oilers organization in terms of salary. But with Draisaitl, I mean, you know, 77 points in 82 games, only 21 years old, only his second professional season with the Oilers last year.
What about
year.
What he did in the playoffs?
Tremendous
in the
playoffs.
He was over a point per game in the playoffs.
The sky's the limit.
He was dominant versus Anaheim.
The sky's the limit for Leon Draisaitl.
Yep.
So, I mean, if he wants a long-term deal with the Oilers, and by which I mean an 8-year contract, not a bridge deal, but an 8-year deal, I can see why he would want $8.5 million, $9 million, $9.5 million, even $10 million a season. And I think that's sort of why, obviously, why part of that agreement is contentious.
Yeah, I don't know if he's a $10 million player, but for me, Leon Draisaitl is definitely a $7 to $8 million player. And, you know, you're talking about a cornerstone piece for the Edmonton Oilers. They're going to build their team around Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, right?
Yeah.
And the Edmonton Oilers surprised many people, not only by making the playoffs, but almost getting to the third round last year against the Nashville Predators. And the Anaheim Ducks obviously had something to say about that. But talking about Draisaitl, I'm surprised, Drew, that he hasn't signed, but this is not uncommon. When you think about Johnny Gaudreau last year, you think about Jacob Trouba didn't sign until November. So, I mean, it's possible that Leon Draisaitl doesn't sign until September, but I have no idea of knowing how contentious this is. I know that Peter Chiarelli and the Edmonton Oilers and their management group obviously want to sign Leon Draisaitl long-term, but you kind of wonder, is there comparables out there for a guy like Leon Draisaitl, right? I mean, Draisaitl is a guy that had the career year last year in his second full NHL season, then is coming off just an incredibly dominant playoffs for the Oilers. And you wonder, you know, are the Oilers coming in at an average value of $6 million, and Draisaitl's camp is asking for $8 million, well, and they're eventually going to get to around $7 million a year.
Now, I look at a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko, who signed an eight-year contract extension with the St. Louis Blues coming off of his entry-level deal. And it was an eight-year, $60 million contract for Tarasenko. And he was coming off of a season in which he scored 73 points, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's that was correct. He had 73 points, and then he signed his big deal. So if you're Leon Draisaitl, you're looking at that as probably a starting point, $7.5 million a year, and say, you know, I'm a center. Tarasenko is a winger.
Yep.
I might deserve more than that.
Tarasenko also put up those numbers later. Draisaitl came into the NHL as an 18-year-old, right?
Right.
So Tarasenko spent a couple of years in Russia there.
Absolutely.
So, and they're different players. I mean,
sure.
Winger versus center. Draisaitl's got that power forward element. Yeah. I really like Leon Draisaitl. I mean, this is a guy, to me, that really impressed me in the playoffs. I can't say that enough. I mean, if you watch that series, Draisaitl was all over the place, scoring clutch goals, setting up plays, establishing himself physically. I mean, this guy just goes perfectly with what Connor McDavid does. You know, Connor McDavid is the most talented player in the league right now, maybe with the exception of Sidney Crosby,
yeah,
but certainly the best offensive player, right?
But, I mean, for the Penguins, I mean, they have Crosby, Malkin. For the Oilers, it's McDavid, Draisaitl.
Absolutely, and that's why I do think that Draisaitl is going to sign around training camp or before training camp. I don't think there's going to be a situation here where Draisaitl isn't signed before the season starts. I just don't see it happening. I don't see it, quite frankly, Drew, with most of the remaining RFAs, right? Because you're talking about some significant RFAs when you're talking about a guy like David Pastrnak.
Sure.
Coming off of a 70-point season. David Pastrnak is a key piece for that Boston Bruins team. And we know that Boston Bruins team has had trouble scoring goals at times, right, Dave? So Pastrnak is another guy. I think he's probably going to fall more in the $5 to $6 million range. But again, I'm surprised that the Bruins haven't signed him. Because when you're talking about the Oilers and the Bruins, Drew, these aren't teams that are having salary cap issues.
No, they have
right?
Yes.
They have the room.
That's right.
Right? So, you know, some of the other teams, and we'll talk about the Detroit Red Wings next with Mike Colligan, the Red Wings might start the season over the salary cap.
Yeah.
Right? So when you're talking about the Red Wings and the Chicago Blackhawks, those are, and the Leafs actually, are having some salary cap issues too. So there are teams out there that are going to be right up against the salary cap, but the Oilers have that room. Right now, it's really going to come down to that AAV, right? And Draisaitl, you got to think, is going to be somewhere between $7 and $8 million.
I think, yeah, somewhere in that range at least.
And it seems like, you know, to kind of shoehorn off what Eddie's talking about, is that a lot of these players may be looking at what are you going to sign for. You know, Mike Liut is the agent for Draisaitl.
Yep.
He may be looking at what, you know, Jack Eichel might be able to command from the Sabres in terms of his deal, mm-hmm, and then say, okay, well, if that's obviously you're the premier player for your team, you know, Draisaitl is appearing to become that next level for the Oilers in addition to Connor McDavid. You know, maybe that is playing into it, and that's part of the reason why we're not seeing these contracts, you know, line up just yet, because, you know, some player is waiting for another player, the shoe to drop in another negotiation. So you, and a player like Pastrnak, you know, Joe Haggerty, Hacks with Hags, was, I read an article, I think he said originally they were thinking it was going to be a six-year, $49 million deal for Pastrnak. I think it may have gone up now. So, you know, I think a lot of these players and a lot of their camps are sitting there. Obviously, the negotiations can go on. There's no limit. The players would like to have them done sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, they just know that there's no urgency right now to get it done immediately.
Yeah, and, you know, it should be noted, Eichel does have 1 year left on right. his entry-level deal, but it's a good point, Dave, mm-hmm, because Eichel, you know, is going to get an eight-year deal from Buffalo.
Yeah.
Jason Bartel is going to want to lock him up. What's he going to make, $8 million, $9 million a year?
Yeah.
I mean, Eichel...
Just a little less than what McDavid makes, and
right,
you know, somewhere in that range.
So it could be a bit of a waiting game. Another guy that's an RFA is Sam Bennett. He's looking for a new contract, so...
Yeah.
I mean, there
hasn't put up the same numbers that the other guys have,
but,
of course,
you know, high draft pick, so he's another guy to look out for.
It'll be interesting to watch. Quick point before we go to breaks, Frank Zappia did text us and actually tweeted out us, and it looks like the answer to is chicken breasts, a delicious pizza, and some sort of roast of some sort. And he says he's delivering it to your condo for your wedding next week. So, you know, you'll be able to keep your food intake at the appropriate levels after last night's pierogi eating contest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I appreciate that from Frank, as long as it's not pierogies.
There you go. You're done with pierogies for a little while. When we come back, our friend Mike Colligan joins us. We'll talk about the impact of the new, about Disney purchasing MLB Advanced Media. What does that mean for the NHL and ESPN? And we'll look around the NHL as well with Mike. That's coming up next, hour number two, on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at KeenerJerseys.com. You can also check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike Colligan. You can find Mike's work at colliganhockey.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Mike Colligan. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, great to be back with you guys. Hope you guys are enjoying the summer so far.
Likewise, Mike. We're trying to make the most of it.
Except the time that we have to spend with Drew, Mike.
Yeah, that's the only time that's really offensive to everybody. But I hope you're enjoying it well down there in Pennsylvania.
Absolutely, yeah. I know with Drew it's a year-round job, but hopefully we got some hockey coming up soon here.
Before we know it, we will be in the depths of training camp, that's for sure. Mike, the big news that came out of the sort of the sports media world earlier this week had to do with Disney. And by Disney, I also mean ESPN, as they have the same parent company, the Walt Disney Corporation. They bought a large percentage, the majority percentage, of MLB Advanced Media. Now, MLB Advanced Media is the body, the organization that has the NHL's digital rights as well. So now a lot of people are making the comparison or connecting the dots that ESPN owns the NHL's digital rights. Maybe ESPN is going to get back into the TV rights question for the NHL come 2021 when the contract is up in the U.S. Do you think that this is sort of the stepping stone to see the NHL back and prominent on ESPN?
Well, I think it's certainly a possibility. You know, it's a pretty complicated situation. I think you did a pretty good job there recapping at least what's happened so far. And for as much criticism as Gary Bettman and Bill Daly get as far as managing the league, I think they've done a pretty good job. If I kind of separate the personal elements of that and just really look at how they've handled negotiating, often in a position of weakness for the game, or at least in an attempt to grow revenues on behalf of the 31 owners that they now represent, they do very well, or what they've done in kind of this era of NHL hockey is given them options. And so many times in the past, the NHL was almost negotiating against themselves in many of these situations where they had one interested party involved. And so the reason I bring that up is I think if anything here, it gives them a secondary option. Right now they have what at the time of signing the contract was what they thought was a pretty good deal with NBC. Now, we know that up there in Canada, there's a far more lucrative deal and one that will take them far beyond 2021 in place. So I think from a Canada perspective, that's pretty well set. But when it comes to the U.S., when you look at the rates that other mainstream sports, NBA or NFL or NCAA basketball, are starting to lock in with some of these big cable providers, it's far above what the NHL has in place. And so it's in their best interest to try and take advantage of what I think is a bubble in the sports media industry and may not even make it to 2021. But if it could be a great opportunity for the league to generate some additional revenue. So if they have ESPN at the table, they have NBC at the table, now you've got an opportunity to play those two against each other in what is essentially a fixed market where there's not like you can go out and find mainstream sports content. There should be opportunities to leverage a deal there. And in a league right now that is struggling to drive revenues up year after year after year, you can only raise ticket prices so much. So it often comes from some of these league-driven revenues, such as media, such as merchandise or events like the World Cup, things that they can find ways to make sure that all 31 teams are benefiting from that growth if it does come.
Mike, it's pretty clear with this announcement, as you mentioned, that ESPN is getting back into covering NHL hockey at a more in-depth level. Is it possible, though, that ESPN and NBC are going to split the national American TV rights, or do you think it's still going to be either one, being NBC or ESPN?
Yeah, I think that's a great point, too, Eddie. I mean, that's certainly what's happened on the NFL front. Now, I think it's because the NFL is just so expensive that it'd be tough for one market to kind of corner the entire monopoly of coverage. But we see that many of the U.S. broadcasters are splitting and taking one day of the week or segments of games and paying huge sums to do so. So if the NHL can work out something where both of them are that desperate and willing to not be the kind of exclusive broadcast partner, I think that's a very strong possibility. You know, the other angle here that I would think about too is NBC has spent tons of money on the Olympics. And when it comes to the Winter Olympics, hockey is the go-to sport. And so one thing I haven't heard anyone talking about is by the NHL kind of saying, hey, you know what, we're going to pass on this Olympics coming up next year. We're not going to send our players over. And by extension, that means we're probably going to see some pretty weak hockey from a global perspective. That's a big hit to NBC. And I don't think it's a coincidence, you know, given all the things that we're talking about here, a pending negotiation, that if the NHL is starting to position with maybe a harder stance against NBC to make sure that they're not pushed over in any kind of negotiation, the Olympics could be a big factor in there as well. And so there are so many moving parts in these types of things, but I think it bears watching. And again, I think if anything, Bettman and Daly have set the NHL up to hopefully take advantage of what it seems to be a pretty good momentum going in the sport so far.
You know, Mike, that's what I wanted to touch on is do you, well, number one, do you see either one of these bids, if it's an ESPN or an NBC, having a greater strength and a, you know, better selling feature, aside from the money aspect, aside from, you know, in terms of being able to help grow the sport in the United States?
You know, I guess that question requires a kind of foresight. Where is sports and technology and media going? And what used to be something where we, you know, you could sit there and watch TSN or Sportsnet, or in the States, NBC and that ESPN and CBS are kind of your major sports channels. I think we're going to a world where we're becoming more and more niched as far as how you consume your content, how you sign up or pay for that content. And so I think what ESPN has done with what Drew mentioned up at the top of the segment was in connecting with the digital rights that protects ESPN against what could be a fracturing of the market where everyone says, hey, I don't need ESPN anymore for 7 or 8 or 35 different sports that they offer. I'm really interested in that hockey component. I'm willing to spend a lot as a consumer on that. And therefore, ESPN is still positioned, if that's where the market goes, that they can take advantage of that and package that up as part of kind of a more broader on-demand or a la carte menu where sports fans can pick and choose what they want. So I think, to me, that's the big uncertainty is just what happens over the next 5 or 6 or 7 years here as far as sports and technology and media consumption. And I think we've seen just so much change over the last few years that it's not out of the realm of possibility that we can't even envision what 2021 will look like as far as this industry goes.
Mike Colligan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike, we're going to shift away from sort of the sports media world. You spent so much and have spent so much time covering the Pittsburgh Penguins that I thought it's only appropriate we touch on that. August 7th wasn't only my birthday. It's also, of course, the birthday of Sidney Crosby, just turned 30 years old. When you look back now that Sidney Crosby's 30, and that's always sort of a key milestone in any athlete's career. When you look back now that Sidney Crosby's 30 years old, what first comes to mind to you?
That's a great question. I think, you know, I want to say consistency when he's been healthy. So I guess by definition, that's not consistency, but the ability to have a star player that comes in with such high expectations and by the kind of milestone age of 30, I think you could say, hey, if he was done tomorrow, he'd pretty much have accomplished everything that you could have ever expected and probably even a little bit more from a career standpoint. So I think that's just so rare. We don't see that happen. Tiger Woods, maybe LeBron James you throw into there, but there's very few players that as a teenager were we're kind of holding them to an extremely high standard that they not only meet but potentially achieve more than that. But so then at the same time, I think back to just a few years ago when Crosby was struggling through concussions, and I think that was a turning point for him in that it probably made him appreciate everything that he had a little bit more. You know, his life is effectively a grind day to day for what he puts into it, well, for what the demands are of him. There's a lot that he has to work through, and he's a driven athlete and very motivated, internally. But at the same time, I think going through a situation where he didn't know if he'd ever play again, he was struggling in some long stretches with those concussion problems. I know I sensed a very different person that came out the back end of those experiences, and I think that's really what sparked this kind of second half of his career, where he was getting worked up earlier in his career on things that I just don't think mattered that much. But when you're a player obsessed with hockey, obsessed with everything that has to do with your game day preparation or the team structure or the management or the coaches or whatever that is, you tend to obsess with the little things. And I sense a player that, having gone through that experience, now pulls back, sees the bigger picture, realizes, hey, this is a great opportunity that, you know, there was a chance I never got this again. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we've seen him probably playing some of his best hockey of his career. And obviously the two Stanley Cups over the last 2 years have shown on a team level he's been able to contribute to that as well.
Mike, coming off their second consecutive Stanley Cup championship, the Penguins lost some players, Nick Bonino, Trevor Daley, Ron Hainsey, Mark Streit, a few others. They traded for Ryan Reeves, signed Matt Hunwick. What kind of job do you think Jim Rutherford has done here in the offseason? The Penguins have about $3 million left in cap space.
I'd give them probably a B-plus or better, I maybe even an A. This is the nature of winning not only one championship, but back-to-back championships in the salary cap sport. Is the players that you have, the role players that you have, are going to get more attention. They're going to get effectively overpaid in a free agent situation. And I think that's what we saw with Trevor Daley, Nick Bonino. Bonino's a nice third-line center, but not worth a second-line center role, not worth over $4 million over a long-term deal that he got in Nashville this summer. But at the same time, we see that happen over and over again. So then it's up to the Penguins, Jim Rutherford, and the staff that they have there to rebuild, in a sense. And I think for many years, the Penguins did not have much of a farm system, did not much have much coming up through. We've seen them able to take advantage of a few players that have cracked through recently. Connor Sheary, kind of an undrafted guy that they picked up and was able to obviously contribute very well on Sidney Crosby's wing. Scott Wilson, Brian Rust, Jake Gensel, guys that snuck in under the radar for many people and were, I think, drafted by the Ray Shiro era that was much maligned on the way out. But at the same time, it takes time for these guys to come around, and we're seeing the fruits of that. Now, do the Penguins have another wave, which is probably going to be necessary? I mean, that's going to be a big question, and if they don't, they're going to have to make some moves here. I think they're going to have some tough questions about a guy like Carl Hagelin, Patrick Hornquist, one year left on his career. I don't know that they'll trade him this year, but they've got to ask themselves, can they afford what he'll probably command on the open market? And then they've got to look at the defense. I think there's a decent group of defensemen there. They've proven they can win with a fairly average set of guys on the back end. But I think every year that's going to get tougher and tougher. And when you look at the players they have there, I'm not overly impressed at this point. But again, in a salary cap situation where you've lost a guy like Trevor Daley and you've spent some of your money to keep a Justin Schultz, you're going to be fixed. You're not going to be able to build an all-star defense year in and year out. So they're going to need to figure out some ways to get some younger blood into there and work them up through the system as well.
Mike, as he was talking about players that were departing, and one management guy that departed was Jason Botterill of Winnipeg. And you know, curious to know what the Penguins have done to mitigate his loss.
It's going to be a big one, in my opinion. He's been a longtime member of the front office as long as anyone, as far as the latest group goes, having been brought in early under Ray Shiro when he came on. And what he was, I think, so good at was managing that salary cap challenge that we just talked about. And when it comes to a team that's at the salary cap, there are just so many other demands that you wouldn't think of on a day-to-day basis. And it can be the difference between bringing a certain guy up from the American Hockey League or who you sign prior to training camp. There's teams like the Detroit Red Wings and Toronto Maple Leafs that are kind of balancing how do we use certain salary cap provisions to get a certain roster on day one versus day two. And I mean, things that if you said, hey, build the best roster you can, these are things you would never think of, but become very big challenges for some of these franchises. So can they find someone internally? I guess a Jason Karmanos, who came with Rutherford from Carolina, potentially picks up some of that salary cap work. Bill Guerin's moved into more of a Wilkes-Barre American Hockey League general manager role. So I think he's stronger on the scouting side and some of the player personnel side, but it's almost an irreplaceable bottle from my opinion. And I think he's certainly going to get an opportunity to work with a pretty up and coming Buffalo Sabres franchise. And we'll see what he can do. You know, sometimes that is tougher for a guy to move from the assistant GM role where you're shielded from a lot of the day to day or the pressure or the public spotlight and into a GM role. But he's a guy that I think was maybe over ready and he's going to get that opportunity in Buffalo now.
Mike Colligan is a good friend of the program. You can read more of Mike's work at colliganhockey.com and follow him on Twitter at Mike Colligan. Mike, appreciate your time. Have yourself a great day. We'll touch base with you again when the season starts.
Always fun. Thanks a lot, and enjoy the rest of the summer.
Likewise, Mike. Take care. When we come back, we're going to look at some captaincy vacancies in the NHL. Who do we think should fill the void of the six teams that are without captains? That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
One of the things that's been mentioned has been the possibility of you being appointed captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I don't want to put you in an uncomfortable situation, but you know McDavid got that honor in Edmonton. Would that mean something special to you? I mean, I know it would mean something to you and it would be a privilege for you. I'm putting words in your mouth, but tell me what that would mean.
Well, yeah, exactly what you said. It'd be a privilege and honor. If you look at the line of captains that have, you know, before us, the players that have come before us, and it'd definitely be a pretty big honor. But I don't know, it's not really something I really get into or think about too much. I mean, for myself, I want to be a leader regardless if I have a letter in my sweater or not. So, you know, I don't know what the management or coaches, you know, what they're thinking as far as that goes. But I mean, I just want to play hockey and help the team win.
That's Austin Matthews of the Toronto Maple Leafs speaking with Bob McCown about the possibility of him being named captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Leafs went without a captain last season. They haven't had one since Dion Phaneuf was traded at the trade deadline during the 2015-16 season. I think we should have a buzzer every time an NHL player uses a cliche. We'd never actually hear the interview. It would just be a constant buzzer going off.
Either a cliche or the word you know. They're saying you know.
Yeah, you know. You know,
my dad and I were once driving home from a Jets game, and they must have played the Flames because Fleury was being interviewed after the game, and he must have said, you know, I think my dad, I can't remember.
Oh, this is back when you were a kid.
Like, yeah,
Theron
yeah.
Fleury. You're
yeah,
Theron Fleury. I'm thinking Marc-Andre Fleury.
No, sorry. Okay. Theron Fleury.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable. He must have said, you know, 50 times. It was crazy.
Yeah. Anyways, six captaincies remain vacant throughout the NHL. We spoke about the Nashville Predators last week.
Yeah, it's going to be Roman Josi.
That's likely going to be Roman Josi. That one just happened because Mike Fisher retired after Shea Weber had been captain there for so many seasons. So now there's five teams that are in need of a captain throughout the NHL. The Vegas Golden Knights are, of course, one of them. They clearly haven't had one because they're a brand new expansion team. The Carolina Hurricanes went without a captain last season. Last person to wear the C there was Eric Staal back in the 2015-16 season. We're actually going to be joined by Chip Alexander of the Raleigh News and Observer at the bottom of the hour, talk about the Carolina Hurricanes and their offseason. The Maple Leafs, we just heard from Austin Matthews. Buffalo Sabres, last year it was Brian Gionta. This year, still yet to be determined. And then the Arizona Coyotes, Shane Doan was the captain for so many years, as we all know. He's now departed the team. I think everyone agree that it's going to be Oliver Ekman-Larsson in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, Oliver Ekman-Larsson is arguably a top 10 defenseman in the NHL. I would argue he is a top 10 defenseman, has been the Coyotes' top defenseman for some time now, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
So Oliver Ekman-Larsson is the logical choice there in Arizona. It's a very young team, we know, with guys like Max Domi, Dylan Strome coming up in the system. So I would be shocked if it wasn't Oliver Ekman-Larsson. I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe went a year without a captain, but it seems like Oliver Ekman-Larsson, he's a guy who's in his mid-20s now. So I would imagine it's him there.
then moving to the Leafs, we just heard from Austin Matthews.
It's going
to
be Austin Matthews.
Would you give it to him this year, though?
Yes, they went, so absolutely.
No question about it?
No questions. And Austin Matthews, I think it's just whether it's going to be this year or next year.
Right.
Again, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, Dave, that the Leafs don't have a captain again this year. But, I mean, it has to be Austin Matthews, doesn't it?
I can't see them giving it to anybody else other than Austin Matthews because he is the... He's obviously the best player on the team. He's the key to all their future success, whatever that future success might be. The question is, would they want to maybe, I mean, you could say, you know, maybe you insulate him from the media a little bit, but truthfully, he's the first person anybody talks to in the, you know, on the, from the media perspective after every game anyways is him because he's the best player. He is now the face of the franchise.
And he's the leader at 19 years old, right? Right.
So.
And I was going to say, I think the other thing is that Connor McDavid becoming captain in Edmonton kind of threw the idea that a young player couldn't be the captain out the window. And I'm not saying that, you know, like here in Winnipeg, a lot of people even thought Mark Scheifele would be the captain. And, you know, a lot of them see him being the next captain of the Winnipeg Jets after Blake Wheeler. But I think that that idea that a young player has to come in and just kind of serve their time and be kind of servile to the veteran group is kind of out the window now, you know. And I think that a lot of young players come in and they kind of assume a bigger role in the dressing room. And while there is still that old guard and that idea of kind of putting your time in, it's hard to do when you have these superstar players who, as Drew just touched on, everybody's going to go to them anyways. So if anybody's going to go to them anyways and everybody already sees them, then isn't that natural to select them as a leader? Now, the only thing you have to factor in is what's your group makeup? Because if your group is a veteran group and you decide to put a guy who's 19 in charge of that veteran group, that might be a tough sell within the room. It's different if you have, like, the Leafs, you know, a younger group of players, then you say, okay, well, then we can all kind of grow together and with Austin Matthews being the face of this franchise.
That's a good point.
But I think, like, it would just be hard to kind of come in there and say, here, you're going to be the captain of these 27 to 31-year-old players who have been in the league for, you know, a lot longer than you have.
And, you know, Drew, just skipping ahead to some of the other teams you mentioned, same thing goes for Buffalo. I think it has to be Jack Eichel. And there are some other players on that team that have a lot of experience in the NHL. So you're talking about Ryan O'Reilly, you're talking about Kyle Okposo, but it's got to be Jack Eichel, not only because he's your best young player now, because you know you're going to build your franchise around these guys. You're talking about first overall picks, second overall picks, right, when you're talking about Matthews and Eichel. So for me, it's got to be Jack Eichel. The question is, do you go a year maybe without him having the C, and then you give it to him next year?
Go with three A's.
Sure.
You know, Ryan O'Reilly has won an A there for a couple of years.
Yep.
I mean, I think the answer to that question is, and I appreciate the question, is it depends on the player. You go to Jack Eichel and you say, Jack, are you ready? Do you want the C right now, or are you more comfortable in a vacancy in that area, and then everybody gets, you know, you would be a part of a group that wears an A for the team? I think you leave it up to the player himself to decide at that point in time, because everybody knows who's going to be the leader in Buffalo. It's going to be Jack Eichel. He's their best forward.
And to Dave's point, both of these teams are young teams.
Sure.
Right? And especially, you know, with Buffalo moving on from a guy like Brian Gionta, they're getting younger this year.
Yeah. I mean, the only one in Buffalo you could make the argument for would be Ryan O'Reilly, because he's sort of, you know, they brought him over from the Colorado Avalanche, but he's... I mean, I think Ryan O'Reilly is still going to be a vocal leader in that team, in that dressing room.
He's a good assistant captain.
Yeah, even without a C on his jersey, I don't think that would be an issue there.
I was going to say the other issue to factor in is you don't want to leave it so it is a question constantly, right? You don't want the media coming in, when are you going to select a captain? You know, constantly, do you want to be the captain? Do you want to be, like, so you don't want it to become a sideshow or a distraction. I mean, and that, what I'm saying is, if you're not going to do it, then you have to establish it right away. And kind of like the coach has to essentially say to the media, this is the way it's going to be. And then that way it's a non-issue to moving forward of point of discussion. So it can't become a distraction.
Like they did in Toronto and Carolina last year, where they came out at the outset of the season and said, look, we're not going to have a captain this year. We're not going to award the captaincy to anybody.
And Carolina, Drew, is an interesting one, because Jordan Staal stands out as the guy that I would give the C to, obviously following in the footsteps of his brother. But you kind of look at the makeup of this team, you know, it's kind of, you know, a coincidence, really, that we're talking about these five teams. You know, you could throw in Nashville and make it six teams, but these are all very young teams.
Right.
And Carolina, guys, didn't miss the playoffs by much last year. They kind of faded, you know, towards the end of the season. But you're really talking about Jordan Staal, Jeff Skinner, or Justin Falk, who all wore the A's last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you know, you'd probably give the advantage to a Jordan Staal or a Justin Falk, who's obviously, you know, the leader of their D-Corps.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's not a clear-cut guy there. Like, for me, I would be absolutely shocked if Austin Matthews and Jack Eichel aren't the next captains. But when you're talking about Carolina, and, you know, we didn't even mention Vegas. I mean, yeah. Vegas, you know, is it going to be one of their veteran defensemen like Jason Garrison or Derek Englund?
Yeah.
You got to go with a veteran there, in my opinion.
Yeah. Vegas, you know, it's sort of a – there's no clear-cut favorite or Vegas. But when we come back – Chip Alexander is going to join us to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll ask Chip who he thinks will be the next captain of the Carolina Hurricanes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Illegal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. For more information or to book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com. I have a double pass to give away to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club right now. Send us a text, send golf to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply, and we'll get you hooked up with a double pass to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. One more time, send golf to 1290.90. We'll get you swinging the sticks at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined on the program by Chip Alexander. Chip covers the Carolina Hurricanes for the Raleigh News and Observer. If I'm not mistaken, the PGA Championship's also happening in North Carolina this week at Quail Hollow. Is that right, Chip?
That's right, at Quail Hollow Club down in Charlotte, about 2.5 hours from Raleigh. So they've had some rain problems down there the last couple of days, but looks like they're hoping to get it done tomorrow, and should have a nice finish to that tournament.
There you go. Chip joins us to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes. We've had a very active off season. Chip, we actually last segment we were just talking about the vacant captaincies around the NHL, and we touched on the vacant captaincy of the Carolina Hurricanes. Would you be surprised if the next captain of the Hurricanes is anyone other than Jordan Staal?
Well, if he'd asked me that a couple of months ago, I would have said that that Jordan Staal just seemed to be the leading candidate by a long shot. And there have been some of us who really believed that he would already, you know, would have won the C last year, but it didn't happen. Since that time, you know, Justin Williams was signed as a free agent, and he comes back to Carolina team. He helped lead to the Stanley Cup in 2006, has two more Stanley Cup rings, a veteran guy. And there's a possibility that Justin Williams may wear the C. I'm just going to guess that. I'm not saying that from any real background or anybody told me that with the team, but certainly with his experience and what he brings to the team, I could see him wearing the C. But then again, at the same time, Jordan Staal does do so much for this team that it wouldn't be a huge surprise to anybody if he were the captain as well.
Chip, yourself and your colleague Luke DeCock earlier this week wrote about the sales draft agreement between Chuck Greenberg and his potential purchase of the Carolina Hurricanes. Can you just update our listeners on where we're at and the earliest that Chuck Greenberg could become the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes?
Well, it would be Chuck Greenberg in an ownership group. I think Chuck, being a sports attorney with a lot of experience in this area, has done a lot of the legwork. He has been in Raleigh a lot talking to potential investors, both, you know, people who are already investing in the team and new investors. And certainly everything, you know, they all talk about this process and how slow it is and how careful you have to be in these kind of negotiations. And certainly I talked with Peter Karmanis recently, and he'd like to get this done sooner rather than later. And he was it's almost as if he was turning the heat up a little bit on Greenberg and saying we need to get this done. And, you know, when all is said and done in October, I think there's a very good chance before the season starts that they're going to announce the new ownership. of the team. Now, you know, there can be some stumbling blocks along the way, and things can fall apart in these kind of big deals like this, but it just seems like there's a lot of momentum now in terms of Greenberg and his group taking over the ownership.
Chip, this is going to be the 20th season for the Hurricanes in North Carolina. Aside from the Stanley Cup, what sort of impact has this team had on the community?
Well, you know, and I covered the team when they first moved here 20 years ago. I've been around long enough to have done that. And certainly I think there were a lot of question marks when the team moved here. This is such a huge area for college sports, and especially college basketball. And the hockey season overlaps the basketball season. And I think a lot of people were wondering, could this team come in and really, you know, find a niche here and really make hockey relevant in this area? And certainly they did that. And one thing that, about the Hurricanes has been, as you would hear from anybody here, is that they're kind of a rallying point for all these various college factions. In other words, I mean, North Carolina basketball fans don't particularly care for Duke basketball fans, but, you know, the two of them together will pull for the Hurricanes. And certainly a lot of that was success. And the Hurricanes had instant success with the 2002 reaching the Stanley Cup final and then, of course, winning the Stanley Cup in 2006. It was almost too much too soon and really established himself in the community. But I think what's happened with the, you know, the economic recession in the U.S. and then with the team not playing as well and not reaching the playoffs, they lost a lot of that momentum and they need to get that back. And certainly I think Ron Francis has done a good job as a general manager in rebuilding the team. And I think if they do change ownership, that will be, you know, offer another big boost to the fans and just to the whole momentum of the team and going into a new season with new ownership.
Chip Alexander is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chip covers the Carolina Hurricanes for the Raleigh News and Observer. Chip, how have expectations changed for this team this offseason? We know how active they've been in free agency. You mentioned Justin Williams. Mm-hmm. We know that they've shored up the goaltending, acquiring Scott Darling from the Blackhawks, in addition to Trevor Van Riemsdyk and Marcus Kruger via the Golden Knights and from the Blackhawks. So how have expectations changed as we enter into the 2017-18 season?
I think the fans are really, you know, pretty excited about this coming season. Last year this time, there was a lot of talk this might be the year for the Hurricanes, that they might end that playoff drought and get back. That didn't happen last year, but I think a lot of good things did happen in terms of the young defenseman gaining another year of experience and a player like Sebastian Aho coming in and making his mark. And one thing that really hurt the Hurricanes last year was their goaltending. Just there was no consistency in goaltending. And you're right. I mean, to bring in a Scott Darling, and they really believe he can be a number one guy, and he certainly has to go out and prove that he's a number one guy. But if they can solidify the goaltending with the young D-men that they have and the scoring potential skill-wise with a lot of these guys who will probably need to pick their game up, and we're not talking about a Jeff Skinner or an Aho, but the Lindholms and Victor Rask bouncing back and Tara Vinen, these guys need to provide more that they have enough there to make and adding a Justin Williams, they have enough to really make a run at a playoff spot. But, you know, the real sobering fact there is that they're in the Metro Division, and that's just a powerhouse division.
Chip, we talked earlier about how the potential sale of the Carolina Hurricanes to a group led by Chuck Greenberg looks very likely. And when you consider, as Drew just asked you about, that the Carolina Hurricanes were pretty active in both the trade market and the free agency market, when you consider that, is this really, you know, is it safe to say that, you know, this is an important year and, you know, a potential renaissance year for the Carolina Hurricanes?
I think it is. I think you're right. And certainly with the Edmonton Oilers, you know, reaching the playoffs last year, that put the Hurricanes in that unenviable spot of being the team in the league now with the longest playoff drought. And they certainly want to end that. And just playing a round or two in the playoffs would do so much for this franchise. I'm sure you guys have heard and maybe have seen it at some point, the tailgate parties and all the excitement in the city of Raleigh when the team is in the playoffs. I heard some people compare it to what happened in Nashville this year, and it's a little bit different in Nashville with the arena being downtown and that kind of thing. But there's a lot of excitement out around the arena here during the playoff period. And certainly I think that's something that this franchise really needs to get back in the playoffs and be a part of that whole scene again.
And, you know, Chip, Drew talked about expectations and, you know, with a team that's only made the playoffs once, I believe, in the last 11 years, how much of a hot seat is Bill Peters on, if any?
Well, I think this is a big year for him, too. You're right. He came in. He's a very well-organized coach. I think the players totally respect what he's trying to do. He certainly has the, you know, the utmost support from Ron Francis and Peter Karmanis as the owner. But certainly at this point in time, he's been given some resources that he hasn't had in the past with a guy like a Scott Darling, with the Williams, with some of these players. And I think the time has come now to show that they can go from, you know, a team that can – they finish with 80-some points to a team that can finish with maybe another 10 points to get into the mid-90s, high 90s and make the playoffs. And this is the year they need to make that leap. But once again, you know, as I mentioned, I think NHL people know. I mean, when you're playing, you know, Pittsburgh one night and the Rangers and all these other teams that you run into in your division and in the Eastern Conference, I mean, it's hard to really make a move up and put together winning streaks. But at the same time, I think what happened in Columbus last year, it, you know, is a real driving force for a lot of franchises to show that, you know, in 1 year's time, you can really make a real bounce back in the standings, in the point totals. And I'm not saying they're going to be the same thing as the Columbus Blue Jackets from a year ago, but it just shows what can happen, you know, with a good start and a lot of positive momentum in a season.
Chip, we'll let you go on this last question. If you look, you know, talk to people, observers in and around the NHL, they'd say that the Hurricanes defense, you know, all very young, up and coming, signed a lot of them to long-term extensions this offseason, that this is sort of, that's the nucleus of the team, is just how good that defense is. Then you got two other defensemen who are recent first-round picks. Jake Bean was drafted 13th overall back in 2016. Hayden Fleury, 7th overall in 2014. Fleury played last season with the Charlotte Checkers. Is the expectation this year that he's going to be able to take that next step and be a regular on the back end for the big club in Carolina?
I think this is his year. I think they really were, you know, pleasantly surprised. I don't know if surprised is the right word, but they really liked the development that he made the last couple of months of the season last year in Charlotte. And certainly, you know, he has the size, he has the skating ability, all the intangibles you wanted a defenseman. And I think he would fit in well with a pretty young defensive group. It's hard to believe that Trevor Van Riemsdyk was brought in and then told he's one of the oldest guys in the group. That just shows you how young the group is. And that includes Justin Falk, who seems like he's been around forever. But, yeah, it's a big year for Hayden Fleury. Jake Bean will come in, I'm sure, with the idea that he can make the team. It might be a long shot this year. But Carolina certainly has a lot of good young defensemen, I mean, in their system. And it's not just those guys you mentioned. So it's going to be a very intense competitive period in training camp.
Chip Alexander covers the Carolina Hurricanes for the Raleigh News and Observer. Chip, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, thank you guys.
Take care, Chip. Big congratulations goes out to Daryl Raherchuk. I hope I pronounced that right, Daryl. You won the Bell Acres passes. Drop them in the mail to you. You'll be on your way to go swing some sticks at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. When we come back, one final segment. We talk pierogies. We talk Ezzie's wedding. Got a little bit of a preview of a Burger Week burger from our friends at Bernstein's Deli. Talk about that next. Lots to come. One final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
A couple of housekeeping notes just before we get into the final segment on this Saturday morning. We're going to be off for the next 2 weeks. We're going to take the last 2 weeks of August off. We'll return on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend. Of course, next Friday night, the big man in the middle over here, he's getting married. So we're going to celebrate the wedding. I'm not sure we'd be in any real condition to be on air Saturday morning. So we're going to take next Saturday off, celebrate Ezzie and Naomi, their wedding, their nuptials. Of course, I believe that the pregame coverage of the wedding begins at 5:30 here on the station. The postgame coverage, including an exclusive interview with the bride and groom, I believe that's at 6:15, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think actually it's it's going to start even earlier on the warm-up. I was talking to Hus at Remus.
Ah.
I thought that they could actually just broadcast right from Fort White.
That would make sense. That's where the wedding's taking place.
Yeah,
but, you know, the paparazzi are going to be, yeah. I assume they're going to be wearing their scuba gear and coming up from the lake to snap
photos.
They'll
be security keeping people out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're keeping Ezzy out of his own wedding. That's what this
is. You know, I got to say, Drew, like, Naomi and I are really excited because you do all of this planning for your wedding, and we've been engaged for, you know, almost 8 months now, or around 8 months. And,
yeah.
You know, the day is finally coming. We're 6 days away here.
Oh, we are all excited and hope that you're competing in some additional pierogi eating competitions between now and next Friday, of course.
I'm gonna take it easy. I'm gonna maybe try something called exercise.
Maybe a vegetable every now and then. Yeah.
Something that's green.
Yeah. Yeah.
Green.
Yeah.
An orange, maybe.
Yeah.
It's only broccoli and
a
water.
A little yellow, maybe.
Yeah, something along those lines might be advisable, but you know, no criticism. You can do whatever you want. Want to make note of one more thing, of course. Burger Week, this segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, home of the Illegal Curve sandwich and official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. It's in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Burger Week is coming up September 1st through 7th. And we're going to have an on-air tasting of the burger on Saturday, September 2nd, of course. But I've been given a little bit of a sneak preview of what Bernstein's Deli is going to have to offer in terms of their burger for Burger Week. So allow me to go through it and try and keep all sounds of you going, you know, to a minimum. It is 2 4-ounce beef patties with local organic grass-fed beef, Bothwell Extra Old Cheddar, a Gunn's hamburger bun with sesame seeds on top. There's a jam on the burger, sort of like a jam of some sort. Bacon, apple, onion, maple syrup, and coffee. That's all as part of the jam on the burger. A house-made coleslaw with added apple matchsticks. They're not matchsticks that you can light a candle with, as just for the record. Pickled jalapenos, sliced Elman's pickles, habanero crispy onions, roasted garlic aioli, and then to top it off, the coup de grace is house-made fried corned beef on the burger as well. So that's the Burger Week entry for Bernstein's Deli coming up September 1st through 7th. I believe you can get in line now if you want to be first in line for the burger. And, of course, we will have an on-air taste test coming up on September 2nd.
Yeah, and Aaron sent me a picture of this burger, and it looks unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
And you mentioned it's not going to be available until September 1st when the Burger Week starts, but boy, I can't wait.
Yeah, you can't wait is right, and me neither. I mean, it's going to be an exciting. It's a good thing, of course, that you know this is happening after you're getting married, because you wouldn't want this to interfere.
No, you wouldn't want it to be a distraction.
No, of course not. You can focus on the wedding for the next 6 days,
yeah.
And then you can shift your focus immediately to the Burger Week.
Do you have any tips for me, Drew? I mean, you're a married man. You've been married for what, 5 years now?
I have been married for 5 years now. The first tip is when it's your wife's birthday and you're on air, wish her a happy birthday. My wife, Laura, turns 32 today. I'm going to wish her a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Laura.
Yes, happy birthday, Laura. Birthday to Laura.
Your better half.
My far better half. There's no doubt about that. Far better half. More attractive, smarter, the whole nine yards than yours truly.
So, Drew, what's the key to a successful marriage?
The key to a successful marriage is, I would say, listening to one another. Communication. Communication would be key. And always making sure you spend time with one another and have fun with one another. You know, because it is work. Marriage, like any good relationship, is work. But you also have to, you know, take some time for yourselves to be able to enjoy each other's company. I know you and Naomi, of course, enjoy each other's company, and she obviously loves you because...
Well, I hope so. We're getting married.
Well, also, she went to see you compete in a pierogi eating contest last night.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it's true love at that point in time.
Yeah, Naomi's my number one fan.
Exactly. She is.
And I'm her number one fan.
There you go. So it's already, that's off to a good start when it comes to a solid marriage base at that point.
So these tips, are they available on some type of website, or do you have a handbook, or should I just be taking notes right now?
I thought I was giving a speech at the wedding. I was just previewing my speech at the wedding, where I'm going to be, you know, giving you some of the wisdom that I have learned in my 5 years of marriage there, Ez. But I guess I'm not speaking anymore.
Yeah, you know, we're very excited, as I mentioned, and you guys are going to be there, and I really just can't wait for next Friday.
It's going to be an exciting, exciting night indeed.
I said to Ezzy when he got into the car, I said, this time next week, you'll be a married man.
You'll be a married man.
Shocking.
I wonder how it's going to change for you.
Well, he'll be wearing a ring.
Yeah.
That's true. You're going to have a wedding ring on.
It'll be
the
ring.
Sorry, ladies of Winnipeg, stay away from Ez.
Yeah, stay away from Ez. He's a married man at that point. Another key thing, don't forget your wedding ring. Because it did take me, there were a couple of instances in the first few months of marriage, because I take mine off every night. I take it off and just leave it on my bedside table. And then there were a couple instances.
Why do you need to take it off?
You know, sometimes if you, I don't know.
Does it get itchy?
You like to clean and shower and, you know, that sort of thing. So I don't mind taking it off. It's, you know, and that sort of thing. So, but sometimes I would forget it when I'd often come to the show on a Saturday morning and you and the aforementioned Richard Pollock would notice that, hey, you forgot your wedding ring. And then you just give me the gears about it on air. So my key would be don't forget your wedding ring as well.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
But even if you don't have your wedding ring, you can still get married. But that's something Naomi and I are definitely not going to forget.
That's true. And Rabbi Leibel, of course, will be conducting the service. Something we're all very familiar with.
Yep. Richie's the best man, so it's going to be a nice family affair.
Oh, boy. You're giving him an open microphone? And he knows your deepest, darkest... We all know your deepest, darkest secrets because we talk about them on air more often than not.
I'm pretty sure everybody knows Ezzy. Ezzy's an open book.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any deep... He doesn't have secrets.
No, there's no secrets. It's, you know, there's no layers to him. That's just pretty much what you see is what you get.
Once you've seen me compete in a pierogi eating competition, there's not much else.
By the way, can we talk about Naomi deserving a little kudos here? Because the fact of the matter is she
was able to harness the bull.
She decided to say, you know what? Most people would be like, you know what? We're getting married in 8 days or 7 days, I guess, at that point. Perhaps a pierogi eating contest, so you'll be exuding the grease of pierogies probably for the next 3 to 5 days. May not be the best idea, but she didn't stand in the way of her man.
No,
She doesn't stand in the way of my happiness, Dave.
Absolutely,
and my
not.
Happiness is eating.
Oh, I've seen you eat, but the point is, and I've seen you eat pierogies. I was at the first one with you.
Yeah,
and I can tell you that was kudos to Naomi because she could have been like, "Well, it's probably not the best idea." You know, but no, she went along with the pierogi eating contest.
She brought friends.
And more importantly, she watched Ezzy eat how many pierogies, Ez?
27 in 10 minutes, which is a 2.7 PPM.
And?
PPM, be that being pierogies per minute.
Yep.
And more importantly, you eclipsed your previous mark of 24?
Yes.
But that was 24 in seven minutes.
Yeah. Yes. We got to give a shout out, Drew. I know we only have a minute or two left here. We got to give a shout out to Stepdaddy Jay, who flew from Richmond, BC. He's the two-time champion now. He set a new record of 58 pierogies in 10 minutes.
That is an accomplishment.
I would imagine Stepdaddy Jay is no longer with us. So,
oh, let me tell you, I met Stepdaddy Jay. It was an honor to meet Stepdaddy Jay because I've been following him on Instagram. I didn't get to meet him last year because I wasn't there. I was out of town. But he is a great guy. He's got five kids. Just an honor.
None of them have been able to eat anything for the last number of years,
of course.
I'm
just curious if he's a stepdaddy to all those five kids or if he's just a regular daddy to those five kids.
He's Daddy Jay to some of them and stepdaddy Jay to others.
Yeah, definitely
and
a good question.
And Dude Love. I was a little disappointed Dude Love wasn't participating.
You know, there were enough characters there. If there was one thing there was no shortage of, there was no shortage of pierogies.
Yeah.
There was no shortage of gluttony, and there was no shortage of characters.
I just love the guy. I forget his name. He brought his own gravy for the pierogi eating competition.
From Steinbeck, right?
I don't even know. Yeah, the guy from Steinbeck. I forget his name. I apologize.
I think his name was from Steinbeck.
I think it might have been Chris or Sean. My apologies. I'll have to check with Huss. But the fact that he brought his own homemade gravy just blew my mind.
And, of course, a complete recap of the pierogi eating contest Monday at 2 o'clock on the warm-up with Hustler and his sidekick, Remus. That's it for the Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to all of our guests, Chip Alexander of the Raleigh News and Observer, Mike Colligan of ColliganHockey.com, and Jim Cerny, Deputy Editor of Sporting News. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download via your Android or Apple device. To subscribe to the show, get it sent to you each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's IllegalCurve.com. Big shout out to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support them because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big props to producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for the soon-to-be-married man Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.